Okay, well, welcome to our village board regular board meeting. It's September 9th at 7 o'clock. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee Bochner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez. Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell. President Ndusi.
Here. Okay, can I ask everyone to stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. We'll wait. I know we've got some people here, I'm sure, that want to speak. But before we get to the citizens' comments, we have a special proclamation. Okay, thanks. So we will, first, I know we have some guests here from the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest, but maybe if you give me a couple seconds, I'll read the proclamation and ask you to come up and receive the proclamation and say a few words if you like. So whereas the League of Women Voters of the United States was formed on February 14th, 1920 at the Congress Hotel in Chicago, and on May 13th, 1924, during a meeting at the Oak Park Arms, the Oak Park Civic League changed its name to the League of Women Voters of Oak Park, becoming a local chapter of the League of Women Voters of the United States. And the League of Women Voters of Oak Park was incorporated on May 13th, 1924, and held its first meeting on October 9th, 1924, to increase the effectiveness of women's voices in furthering better government. And the League of Women Voters of Oak Park became the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest on May 21st, 1947. And the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest is one of more than 40 local leagues in the state of Illinois and more than 700 local, county, and state leagues in the United States. And the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that encourages all people to be informed and active participants in government, works to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influences public policy through education and advocacy. And the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest has, during the past 100 years, made significant contributions to good government in River Forest by conducting voter registration drives, holding candidate forums, and observing and reporting on government meetings. And the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest will celebrate its centennial anniversary on October 20th, 2024, with a gala celebration to be held at the 19th Century Club, 178 Forest Avenue, Oak Park. So now, therefore, I, Catherine Ndusi, President of the Village of River Forest, do hereby proclaim October 9th, 2024, as the day to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the League of Women Voters of Oak Park and River Forest, and encourage all citizens to support its vision of a democracy where every person has the desire, the right, the knowledge, and the confidence to participate. Congratulations on your 100th anniversary.
Thank you so much. Would you like to say a few words? We'd love to hold that. I have a few words and then we'll be quick. It's a tradition of the League to hand out a yellow rose as a symbol of gratitude and in memory of the hard fight that's been to thank you for this. With your permission, we'd like to give to the members a yellow rose.
Great, thank you. Very nice.
It was August 18th, 1920. Here's the traditional yellow. 1920. And 35 states had passed in 1920. One more was in. And their state felt consensus. It was not promising. The Harry Truman Dash, the president of the League, preceded the voters. said it doesn't matter if ghosts can't know. And so on August 1920, they called a special session in Tennessee. They had a vote to delay it there. They tried to delay the vote. If that had been successful, that would have seriously jeopardized the passage of the 19th Amendment nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one fella, and his name was Harry T. Booth. He was 24 years old, youngest member of the legislature. And up to this time, how they had signaled their support or opposition, those men, and they were all men, of course, were Red Roses of the House, who were in Gibson. And those who were for it were Yellow Roses in the House. And so Mr. Byrne, he had told his constituency he was against it, and he wore a red rose. On the very day of the vote, he got a 7-page letter from his mother, who finally said many things to him. One of them, I like to think, might be, if you ever want Sunday supper, son, think about the vote. But he said, she said, be a good boy and vote for suffrage. And he did. He walked down onto that floor, and he said, I vote aye. He didn't change his rose. He said, aye. And with him, the 19th Amendment secured the vote for women to vote.
Huh?
And of course, pandemonium ensued. Yellow roses were thrown everywhere. They say Harry Burns had put the vote behind. But it passed. And so, so that's where we got the 19th Amendment, and that's our yellow vote.
Wow, great.
Symbol of fortitude and hope and victory. Mm-hmm. So thank you, River Forest. It's a wonderful honor and responsibility.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank Keep you. Up the good work. Okay. What great stories. Okay, we'll move on to up. Oh. Yeah. Okay, we'll go move on to citizens' comments. So we have three. We'll have Perry and Jerry then come up. Perry, you can come first. Jerry, and then Margie, we can wait. And well, you got neighborhood, so we can also have you up. Okay. So Perry. Oh, Jerry. Okay, whatever you want.
Hi, everyone. Dear President Aducci and the Village of River Forest Board of Trustees, my name is Jerry Humbert. I have lived at 1319 Park Avenue since 2002. In 2005, Dominican University changed its campus by its master plan. One of the changes was building a parking garage. Park Avenue and Greenfield Street residents, including myself, actively supported this initiative, seeing it as a solution to our residential streets, traffic, and parking issues. Our collective support and collaboration were instrumental in making this change a reality. Different individuals opposed the planned campus expansion because trees were removed to accomplish the construction. The Park Avenue and Greenfield residents had one request, that Dominican University install a gate prohibiting traffic from Park Avenue to the west side of campus where most parking existed. The plan came to fruition, and as predicted, traffic on both Greenfield and Park Avenue was significantly reduced. All was well in our part of the village. Fast forward to 2020, several things happened to reverse progress in terms of traffic and parking. A KLOA parking study removed the two-hour parking on Park Avenue adjacent to Dominican. Dominican University removed the gates that prevented east-west traffic on campus. Since it was COVID-19, the impact of such concurrent changes was not initially evident. And I'd like to mention, we didn't hear anything about either of those changes, any of the residents on Park Avenue. Due to my house location, and I look out the window too much, I'm getting old, I noticed a significant increase in traffic on Park Avenue in 2023. The cars were using the access drive to Dominican University off Park Avenue, as well as parking on Park Avenue for extended periods. I discovered that the gate preventing the east-west traffic had been removed and the two-hour parking restrictions were gone. I first notified Park Avenue by phone and followed up by email in August of 2022 regarding the missing gate. I'm sorry, I noticed the traffic in 2022 and then notified them in August of 2022. Dominican University took nearly 2 years to reinstall the gate. To say they dragged their feet is an understatement. The gate was reinstalled in May 2024. Residents of Park Avenue noticed that during the 2023 school year, there was no parking on Park Avenue anymore. Residents came together to object to Park Avenue being filled all day by the DU population. Police Chief James O'Shea provided relief by posting temporary resident-only parking placards. We were told we would get permanent resident-only parking. Calm, return to Park Avenue. Then the temporary resident-only parking placards were removed. To say it has been chaotic on Park Avenue. Sorry, I lost my spot here. To say it has been chaotic on Park Avenue for the last 3 weeks as DU has resumed classes does not justify what is happening. DU has a big parking problem. Most likely due to their record enrollment and the sale of the Priory campus to Fenwick. Walking, biking, or driving is unsafe for anyone on Park Avenue. It's that simple. We need urgent attention from Dominican University. This is not the fault of the students or the fault of the residents of Park Avenue. This is a shortcoming of Dominican University to plan adequately. I'm not a parking expert, but DU could take some temporary measures tomorrow to solve this issue while they determine longer-term solutions. They could park temporarily on their property like they did in 2006 and 2007 while building the parking garage. I have a picture from the 2005 plan development, which shows that they parked on the grass there at Division and Park temporarily while they were building the parking garage because they had nowhere else for students to park. They could lease parking from Menards and shuttle students, staff, and faculty to campus. They could even walk from Menards. It's a 15-minute walk. I tried it. And it's a sidewalk the entire way. They could bike from off-site parking locations. They could encourage carpooling by providing premier parking spots to those who carpool. There are many solutions. The residents of Park Avenue, for the residents of Park Avenue, we have a petition signed by 88% of the houses on Park Avenue requesting resident-only parking. We will attend a traffic meeting with our petition. We would greatly appreciate your support, President Aducci and the trustees. We know that you put residents at the top of your decision matrix when making decisions. And due to this sharp turn of events on Park Avenue, we need some assistance. Thank you for your service and for watching out for the residents of River Forest. Yep. And if I could just turn over, I have all the, like, I cut out all the things from the plan development, which talked about the committed to no, you know, not having the population of Dominican on the residential streets of Greenfield and Park. I mean, there's so many instances of it in the plan development. And then also just the little picture they had where they had the temporary parking. But it was so chaotic today. The parking garage is full. The kids are rolling around Park Avenue and the campus. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Okay. Let Perry talk. Thanks, Jerry.
I won't duplicate what Jerry said, because a lot of it is, but I'm Pietrangela Murphy. I live at 1223 Park. I've lived in River Forest since 1973, 51 years, but at Park since 1994. Anyway, I came before the board just because of the same issue, this parking situation. It's really gotten out of control and it's gotten out of hand. And I have a neighbor. Most of us are seniors on the block. We were able to get these 75% signatures, which is that minimum. They're going to meet, Jerry and another neighbor are going to meet the Traffic and Safety Commission. So we have a solid position. But I did want to say a couple of things in addition. Our block, I calculated the taxes that we pay. And here they are. And the bottom number is $440,550 we pay just in that affected homes on that block. Dominican pays zero, never has paid a dime. So I think we're in a position to ask Dominican to be better neighbors. These are some of the things that I see are problems. The driveways are narrow. The residents need the spaces across the street for access. There are service people, friends, family that need to gain access to our residences. And students and staff park for really long periods of time, and they restrict all parking altogether. They use our driveway aprons to perform three-point turns. And due to a dreadful robbery that occurred right next door to me, criminals can easily hide among all those cars, and they case the houses, and they watch the residents' comings and goings. And it did happen to my neighbor. And then for safety concerns, there's a lot of senior citizens. The cars exceed the speed limits. The children on bikes risk injury from the car doors opening without regard. I've seen a lot of near misses. So we've been good neighbors to Dominican. We don't complain about the ambulances, the police cars, the fire trucks that consistently go there. We don't complain about their Dominican events. We've all been there. We've all done that. It's fun. It's fine. But they haven't really been good neighbors to us, and they just need to find a solution and not burden the residents. I notified Kathy Aducci, and as always, you were very engaged. I appreciate that with the residents' concerns. And the police were also very helpful regarding the speeding problem on Park. But it's time to permanently place. It'll be Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, school days only. That's what we're asking for. And it does come from over 75% of the residents affected. That's all I'd like to say. Thank you.
Okay. You want to comment, any comment on that? Because I think there's a lot of activity going on with it. So,
sure. I think my only comment, it will be on the agenda for the Traffic and Safety Commission next Wednesday night. I know our staff has been out there, police and public works, to monitor the activity that's been going on the last couple of weeks since the school year restarted. And we're collecting our own data to go along with some of the resident reports, too, to try and find a solution that will work for the neighbors.
Jerry, I think some of your solutions are kind of creative ideas. I like it, you know. I mean, they have buses, huh? We might need some. All right. No, thank you. So I appreciate you all coming. All right. Margie?
Margie Secondor, 531 River Oaks Drive. I've been here 28 years. I was going to speak on about two topics and a question. The Harlem Avenue Viaduct has been in engineering planning for over 16 years, since before the 2008 IGA, between River Forest, Forest Park, and Oak Park. That IGA committed River Forest to share equally with the other two villages in the 20% remainder after the IDOT expenses, even though the bridge is a railroad bridge, UP Railroad now, used by IDOT, CTA, Metra, with half of it extending to the Oak Park side and little of any of it impacting River Forest. Now the village wants to spend nearly $250,000 alone on engineering planning. In return, the Illinois Department of Commerce gave similar amount in a grant. Now that Don Harmon is our state senator, that's how Illinois politics works, regretfully. I give you that, you give me this. UP Railroad won't agree to on engineering planning until some publicly funded bodies agree on maintenance and ownership, meaning a private entity, the railroad, bridge paid for by taxes. You shouldn't go to negotiate a better deal for your constituents. I have a question on the electoral board that was held, and Clerk Keller, you're the only person from that board. The audio was available the first day, August 20th. No audio was made available after that. I don't know why the decision was made that way. And how will minutes or audio be shared with the public? Moving on to my last topic. It's on neighborhood dialogues. Recently, the village president announced a series of neighborhood dialogues to be held in private homes south of Lake Street, facilitated by a public affairs consultant, funded by village taxes, and attended by the village administrator, Mr. Walsh. The intent stated in the online newsletter is to gather input and answer questions to, quote, to help the village develop a path to future economic development. Input, end quote, input and explanations will be collected from the village president's supporters without media and public access. The consultant and the village administrator can direct messaging and lead residents toward the village's intended plans. These private dialogues would be hosted by 6 to 10 village-selected residents living south of Lake Street, with attendance limited to 10 to 15 guests at each. Excluded are hosts residing on Lake Street and northward to North Avenue, and uninvited residents. Despite the village's development and zoning plans for the North Avenue TIF districts and two Lake Street corridor commercial districts, these dialogues and a new program of quarterly conversations with residents are campaign events modeled on our traditional local campaigns. President Ducey, in your 12th year as village president, you held your first quarterly conversation in May. Proposed to be a Good Earth nursery, a past campaign contributor, and a village vendor, and less than 3 months before scheduling your September campaign fundraiser. Why hold these events south of Lake Street? These dialogues are divisive. They're intended to divide the Northeast opposition to the proposed traffic flows from the Madison Street area opposition to the proposed zoning changes. Despite persistent claims of transparency, these ill-conceived PR events, never discussed with the public nor with the full Board of Trustees in front of the public, are clearly and timely designed to favor the village president and manipulate information for campaign purposes. Like hand delivery of weekly news and monthly newsletters to condo buildings, but not to an entire class of residents, the divisiveness of proposed zoning changes and the altered traffic patterns, the village leadership again divides and discriminates against residents. The best leaders unify residents. Thank you.
Thanks, Margie. All right. I think that concludes our citizens' comments. So we'll move to elected officials' comments and announcements. So maybe I can ask Erica, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off with a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We'll remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. One thing that I want to, or actually a couple of things, but one thing I want to highlight is that September is Suicide Awareness Month. I had become aware a couple months back that River Forest in particular has had its, I'll say, unfair share of suicides in the past year or so, and have connected with the River Forest Township, the Oak Park Township, and Thrive to work on year-long campaigns around suicide awareness. One of the most important is the fact that we now have a 988. That's what I was going to go with.
988.
988 hotline that folks can call and be immediately connected to somebody that who can help them. We, as a township, as a River Forest Township, are going to be providing yard signs. I believe you can get those at the township. It might be interesting to see if we can have some provided as well in the village area. One of the reasons for these yard signs is people often say when they were contemplating suicide, they just wanted one sign to tell them to not do it. And so something like a yard sign can serve as that one sign to not do it. As well, Thrive is going to be hosting an event towards the end of September I think it might be September 26th. I don't have the actual date on hand right now. But that is going to be around suicide awareness, panel discussion, I believe in relation to men in particular, which again has been something that in River Forest has been a immediate need. So I ask that everybody go to that. If Matt, maybe you could provide information on that on our website and our newsletters and social media, that would be wonderful. But I think, you know, taking into consideration, we have come out of a pandemic. I just heard on NPR today that they have found like actual proof that teens' brains were majorly affected during COVID and the pandemic by isolation and all these things. And all of this contributes to suicide ideation. So if each one of us can maybe do something during this month, to make ourselves more aware and to maybe train ourselves or think about this issue. I think it's important for our community. On a lighter note, on September 14th and 15th, I am working with two other trustees from Maywood and Westchester on a family kayaking event at Trailside Museum.
Right.
And I believe slots might still be open, Luke. There are slots for a few times during the day, each day. Everyone gets trained up on how to kayak if you haven't done it before. It's about 30 minutes to 45 minutes on the pond. And the intention is to continue the work that we've done through the Twin Village Covenant, to gather folks from different communities in our area and join and have a fun time. And so, you know, crossing fingers that the weather is good from what we're told. We'll be out there, rain or shine, unless there are like, there's thunder and lightning in the sky. So it's a free event and just hope that everybody comes to enjoy our wonderful Thatcher Woods.
Yeah, great. Great event. Thanks, Erica. Appreciate it. Lisa?
I have nothing. Thanks.
John? Nothing to add. Thanks.
Katie?
Okay, I have a few things. First is just a reminder that tomorrow is the annual Lemonade Charity event from 4 to 7 on the 700 block of Bonnie Bray. The weather looks like it's going to be great. And there are two very worthy charities that have been selected this year as recipients.
Not tomorrow. It's Wednesday. You said tomorrow.
Oh, it's on 9/11. Yeah, Wednesday. Thank you for that. Yeah. So I just hope that those who are able to attend can, and I know that our fire department will be there and do their usual participation. Also, thanks to the League of Women Voters for being here, for the flowers, for the information about the history of women, the women's right to vote, and for all of the work that you do on a volunteer basis. Let's see. Oh, I actually, Trustee Bochner and I both attended the resident meeting last week that was advertised as Kathy's Casual Conversation with Residents. And there were some good questions with residents about Lake and Lathrop, the rezoning issue, and several about traffic and safety. Thank you to Matt and Jessica and Jack for attending, especially to Jack, who fielded more of the questions than I think anyone else. Wanted to mention that. And then also, I guess since we last met, I was fortunate to attend 3 days of DNC events, including presentations by Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, who talked a lot about the importance of local elections and the work that local elected officials do, the voice of their communities, and, you know, the uniquely tangible impact that local officers have on the cities and villages that we all represent. Second to last, Kava. We have a new restaurant in town. My daughter and I enjoyed it today. She and her friends had really been looking forward to it. I'd never tried it before, but it met expectations. So it's exciting to have a new business, and I hope that everyone else enjoys it and patronizes it. And then I guess the last thing, I hadn't planned to say anything about this, but Margie's comments about the neighborhood dialogues, I guess, landed on me. I don't know much about what's going on with that. I don't know what's being talked about or what the topics are. So I guess maybe I would take this chance to ask, you know, what's the genesis of that and what's being discussed at these meetings? Because there is no, as I understand it, no public record of it.
So the genesis of the neighborhood dialogues, really, you know, looking back to the discussions earlier this year with the text amendment, and we were trying to think of different ways to communicate with residents, started to, you know, issue postcards out to try and get more folks to sign up for the newsletter, just trying to do different ways aside from the traditional village board meeting, committee meeting, and things to have conversations with residents. I've had meetings with residents on various topics and in their homes and out there. And we had Rick Jaskolka reach out to the village with this idea that kind of lined up with what staff had been talking about, these kind of smaller scale meetings. I will say that we're kind of learning to see what works too, what the venue will be, what the size will be, to kind of see what works best. So the primary goal is to really talk about economic development. I think that that's a conversation that has been going on with residents for some time, and I think is on top of mind with residents. So that is a large part of the goal, to talk about the development sites that exist in the community and what residents want to see there, specifically the Madison Street site. That's the village property that is being marketed for scale, has been for some time. We want to hear what residents want to see there, what they don't want to see there, and what the concerns are, and how we might be able to address them as we look to develop the property, and also how we apply our plan development process to those potential developments.
How do we decide who's going to attend and host?
So we opened it up for anyone to volunteer to host. We have gotten a few volunteers, and we still are looking for more. So if anyone has any residents that want to host, we are happy to work with them. And we currently are encouraging those neighbors to invite their neighbors and friends. So kind of trying to make it organic. I know that's kind of an overused word, but in no means is it trying to be targeting to specific residents and their stances on everything. That's why we put it out in the newsletter first before inviting anyone specific. Naturally, we have, you know, volunteers that have helped in other things that I think we'll reach out to if we don't have luck in getting people to step up and willing to host. We're also looking at potential venues for those that aren't comfortable hosting in their own homes or backyards, to whether it's a business or another institution, to make it a little bit more welcoming to folks that might not be welcoming. We wanted to avoid having it here at Village Hall because we want it to be more of a conversation. And I think the conversations like we had Saturday or last Saturday at the depot was kind of an example of what I hope to come from that. Just whether it's a question about economic development, anything else in the village that they want to ask me or other staff members that will be there, just a conversation for anyone that wants to come out and talk.
And you might,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'll remember my question.
I just want to clarify. The conversations are supposed to be south of Lake Street, but not on South Lake Street. So like
south of Lake Street is what we've kind of viewed as this test area, the phase one.
Okay.
But again, we're kind of flexible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Katie. Yes. Yeah. And so, and then who is the village representative that's there? Is it just you or Jessica or other staff? Or
I will be at all that I am able to, and Jessica will be kind of the backup. But yes, it would be Jessica or I as the lead village representative at all those meetings.
Okay. Makes sense. Are village, are elected officials invited to attend, or is that better that elected officials don't attend?
It was not the intent to have elected officials there. because of didn't necessarily want it to be viewed as more contentious or about votes, just kind of a conversation. Me as the village board representative hearing the residents, I wouldn't necessarily bar any members from coming. I can't really do that anyways. But I think the intent was to just have me be the earpiece for the board.
And then would you envision then like keeping notes and just sort of either letting, how does that work? You'd let the EDC know the input that you got or let the village board know or both know?
Probably both. I'm not exactly sure what that deliverable looks like at this point, but yes, we will be taking notes because we don't want it to just be, you know, spoken. Okay. Thanks everyone. Have a good night. And then we want to take those notes, research them, whatever the questions or concerns folks have and try to figure out a way to address those ones we can now and then any that come up in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
Ken? Okay, just a couple quick things. Specifically for the residents, please be advised that September is a month to sign up for hazardous waste collection. You have until September 30th. And it's actually a longer list than you would expect. It includes everything from aerosol to paint to lithium batteries. And I'm sure we all have those at our house and are trying to figure out a way to get rid of them. So please be cognizant of signing up before the end of, or basically September 30th. The second thing was more of a suggestion for the newsletter. You know, as we enter, although we're somewhat into it, but as we enter the political season, maybe a reminder of where signs can go versus where they cannot just might be important to get out.
Good point. All right. Thanks. I just have a few things. First of all, I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters for being here and the proclamation that we passed. I look forward to going to the October 20th gala. And I thank you for inviting me as a special guest. So, sure.
My name is Jane Heasley.
Yes.
I'm president of the League of Women Voters of the Forest. The one who spoke with me is Joan Petersell.
Yep.
Yep. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. Oh, you're welcome. And we're happy to do it. And like I said, I'm excited to be part of about the gala. And I really recommend anybody that's listening to be part of the gala. It's a great, it will be a great event. So a couple things. I want to thank Erica for talking about the suicide awareness. I used to be on the Thrive board. I'm very passionate about suicide awareness. So I appreciate her efforts toward bringing together both townships, Oak Park, River Forest, and Thrive. It's a good program. And I'm happy that, you know, we're making some efforts collectively with those government entities. So thanks, Erica. Again, the lemonade. This is an important event for us. It is a neighborhood event. So I hope everyone will join on 9/11. I believe the actual ceremony will begin about 4 o'clock, 4:30-ish. So I think right where we'll do the kind of the acceptance of the money from the two nonprofits and then the ringing of the bells from the fire department. So please come out at least around that time, if not longer. I want to also thank the board, the staff for taking on the initiative of the neighborhood dialogues. I think it's a creative way to bring together the neighborhood and to bring together neighbors and residents that want to talk about a very important topic, which is economic development. So I appreciate all of you for, you know, thinking of that and following up and doing. I'm working with a longtime resident, Rick Jaskukel. So it sounds very exciting. So thank you for that. And we do look forward. I know the board does. I do to the input and the updates from your meetings. So thanks. We, as Katie said, we had a great casual conversation. The second one that I did, we had some really great questions. And I appreciated the frankness and openness that people came with. I thought it was a good conversation. People were very kind and nice. And really wanted to learn and listen about some of the things that are going on River Forest. And like Katie said, Jack took most of the questions, because there was a lot of questions about traffic. Yeah, he's great. We got a great staff. I mean, thank you, Jerry. Frank, so a traffic and a lead replacement program, which is going to be a really big issue that the board and I will need to address as we move along on, you know, that whole initiative, which is, it's a bit daunting, and we'll get more into it as, you know, we get the surveys back and see just how big this issue is. So, but I'm glad people have come out and really talking about really important issues that's going on in River Forest. So we're scheduling third casual conversation, or looking at November 23rd. I'm still working on the date, but that's kind of what we're kind of settling on. So that's all I have to report. So we'll go ahead and move on to our regular agenda, if that's okay with everyone. So we'll go to the consent agenda, which is item number 6. If I can get a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda.
Motion to approve the consent agenda items A through F.
Second.
Okay. Any questions, comments on those items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read them and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, August 12, 2024. B, Village Board of Trustees executive session meeting minutes, August 12, 2024. C, monthly reports. D, administration department report. E, August 2024, accounts payable, $2,666,361.92. F, amendments to Chapter 9-2-19 of the River Forest Village Code, schedule of fines and fees for compliance warning tickets ordinance. Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, our next item is item number 10. This is new business. So I need a motion and a second to approve 10A, and then we'll have Jack or somebody speak on, or probably you can, all right, on the motion. So if I can get a
motion. I would like to make a motion to approve an intergovernmental agreement with Oak Park and Forest Park for the Harlem Viaduct Phase 1 engineering and engineer agreement with for a not-to-exceed cost of $248,211 and authorize the village administrator to execute the contract agreement.
Need a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, Matt, I think, yeah, Matt has been involved with this. So, yep.
So yes, this project has been kind of out there for quite a long time. Oak Park, River Forest, and Forest Park have all been interested in seeing improvements to the Harlem Viaduct there south of Lake Street. Earlier this year, the state awarded a $250,000 grant to the Village of River Forest to help complete the Phase 1 engineering study. This study was originally approved over 15 years ago and is no longer valid or useful for proceeding with construction of any improvements to that viaduct. So the village was a lead agency on that project going back to at least 2008, and that is why the grant was awarded to River Forest. The proposal for the engineering agreement to finish that phase one is slightly below $250,000. So if all goes according to plan, it will be fully funded by the state grant. We believed that it made sense to update the intergovernmental agreement because it hadn't been updated since 2008. It was really just kind of carrying forward the same provisions with Oak Park and Forest Park. The cost sharing agreement at that time and what is in here, at least in the 2008 agreement, was 50% of the cost was borne by Oak Park and then 25% by both Forest Park and River Forest. The scope of this work, Lochner is the same vendor that had done the phase one engineering. And they will be completing the work. We met with them earlier this year to request the scope of work. and then also to get an update on what work had happened. Fortunately, the engineer that is the lead on the project with Lochner has been around since that 2008 agreement, which was helpful because a lot of the staff on all three municipalities was not familiar with what was going on in 2008 when the first when the last agreement was approved. Most of the work will be updating the traffic counts and conditions that are out there. As we know, there's been a lot of changes around the downtown Oak Park and Forest Park and River Forest area since 2008. This will incorporate those traffic flow changes, and also Lochner and the engineering firm will help us have those conversations with the other entities that need to be involved, which are CTA, Metra, IDOT, and Union Pacific.
It's all paid for.
Matt, what are the this plan is to reinforce and repair the structure. Is it going to also change the traffic pattern there?
Yeah, we'll let Jack come up and do some of the technical. It will kind of depend on what's recommended with the phase one engineering, but I'll let Jack.
Yeah, so one of the things, hello everyone. So one of the things that we're looking at as part of the phase one development is the removal of that center median to potentially put in a left turn lane. That is one of the things being reviewed as part of the phase one. Whether or not it's recommended, that's going to be that final determination based on these updated traffic counts, because that new building that went up in Oak Park is a significant traffic generator. So now they need to look at everything and whether or not it makes sense to now make that new movement.
So the height won't change for trucks and everything. That's not going
to
change, right?
The height is supposed to change, so it's actually supposed to, the roadway is going to be lowered.
Or, okay. Actually, it's almost impossible to lift it. Yeah.
And how do we handle the water issue when you lower the...
So, and that's part of the phase one development, is they did their drainage analysis to make sure that all the pipes, everything that they have over there, whether or not, and I believe that was already done as part of the first piece of that phase one, is that the pipes are low enough. So I met with the engineer out there initially when I was trying to get a grasp of what's going on. The pipes themselves, the main drainage lines, are low enough, so we're fine. We're just making adjustments to the inlets to actually carry the water in.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. What's the general timeline? Did everything, move in the right direction?
Go
ahead. Sorry.
It's for the phase one engineering, we expect it to be about a year. In terms of any, at that time, we'd get the recommendation, have to decide as the three communities how to proceed. The expected cost of this will be significant. So I think the plan would be, once having that phase one completed, to go seek out grant funding, whether state or federal funding sources. The three communities entered or applied for a grant in probably late 2022 or early 2023 for a $20 million construction grant. But part of the reason we were not awarded was because we didn't have an updated and completed phase one engineering. So I think based on the cost of the project, we would need significant help to see the project through. So I think we'd make a point to keep applying for those, and how long that will be, I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Is the expectation that the contribution from the three involved municipalities for the actual structural part would reflect the same percentage pro rata contributions as the planning part?
We don't know.
Not necessarily. I think we would certainly want to, it would make sense, but I think based on the dollars we're talking about, we need to make it something that was palatable for River Forest to even proceed with the project.
And I think that's true for all the other, Forest Park and Oak Park. I mean, I think, there's been money, I forget all the categories that the federal government had for, maybe you can remember, Jack. I mean, they had
the initial grant we got was HPP.
Yeah.
I forget, but there's all these different funding categories,
right,
for infrastructure and just development from the federal government. Given the size and scale of the project we're talking about, there's a lot of different things that can hit. And that's where you know, have like Matt mentioned, like having that updated phase one just all of a sudden makes us more eligible for all these different things. And that's why, you know, for us, it's completing it. But also when we had that initial phase one, having just the funding distributions, we thought it would be, you know, appropriate given the time frame just to update, make sure everyone's still on the same page of where we're at with this.
Yeah.
Thank you. So for the phase one engineering, when Katie asked about water and like how it pools there, the study that you were referencing was from 16 years ago, or am I getting that incorrect?
That's incorrect.
So it was first, so the first actual just thought of the project, yes, it was initially done way back in 2008. And I think even before that, even it was discussed. We have planning documents from way even before then, but the formal part of the actual study was more recent. So we're talking more, you know, 2008 was that initial agreement, but then all the studies and developments have been going on through the years after that.
So around what year are we talking was the last study done where we're pulling the information about everything should be fine as long as we lower it, the pipes are lower?
So, and I don't want to give you an exact date right now. Yes. I mean, it's generally recent, but there's a reason when we go to the consultant and we talk about what portions of the phase one need to be updated and what needs to be re-evaluated. Mm-hmm. The reason the traffic analysis absolutely has to be changed is given the actual, you know, just flow of traffic, given the new generators, all that kind of stuff, in terms of what, you know, the pipes and the different structures in the ground, we do have an accurate record of what that was. And we do have just what is generating the water in terms of that kind of stuff. So that is a quicker thing that you're able to re-up and just, you know, get an accurate information for, rather than the traffic data where you really have to go out there and you have to watch it for an extended period of time.
Yeah, that's my concern, is that we're going to be using old data for, you know, what weather looks like today.
Right? I doubt wouldn't allow that. So like when we do that phase one initial, like submittal for the project development report for the PDR, like the final submittal, IDOT's going to go through every division, traffic, drainage, structural, every single person's going to get their say over there.
Yeah, I'm very confident in the process. I mean, we've got, you know, federal, well, you're right. It's IDOT won't let anything, you know, kind of go aside. I know several years back when we had the, I don't know if it's a second engineering, but the engineering study that we're referring to, I know that both Senator Durbin and Congressman Davis offices were very interested in this project. So if they keep interested in this project and we get the engineering done, I honestly think there's a possibility that the three villages could get something significant from federal government. So thanks. This is an important step. Okay. There's no further questions, and I'd ask to clerk to take the vote on this, please.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. Now we have 10B. If I can please get a trustee to move 10B in a second to the motion.
Motion to approve a resolution of financial commitment that states the village commits to fund the required local match and will, and all ineligible costs if awarded the ITEP grant funding for Washington Boulevard.
Mm-hmm. Here's
second.
Okay, great. I think I'll let Matt talk about this, but this is part of the whole traffic survey.
Correct. So as one of the main focuses of the village-wide traffic study was the concerns about Washington Boulevard and the speeding along that route. The village-wide traffic study confirmed that there was significant speeding along really the whole length of Washington Boulevard. The average, the 85th percentile speed, which is generally what, you know, traffic consultants measure for what the concern would be, was 38 miles an hour, which is 13 miles above the speed limit there. And even during rush hour, it was even higher, almost 16 miles an hour over the speed limit, which is makes for a dangerous road. So as part of the village-wide traffic study, there was a concept plan done by Thomas Engineering that included various curb extensions or bump outs, and commonly referred to as, or raised crosswalks near Washington Square Park, different things throughout the corridor to slow traffic down. As the first step of that, we put out the bollards, and the village board approved putting out the delineator of the bollards along the corridor to try and mimic what was recommended as part of that study, to kind of choke down the road and slow down traffic, keep people from going around cars that are either stopping or turning left. And the timing of the study worked out well, and that the ITEP funding was coming around. The application period is ends at the end of this month. This is the same program that was used to fund the Chicago Avenue improvements. So this resolution commits the village to funding 20% of the eligible project costs, which are spelled out in the memo. I think the eligible local share cost is a little under $300,000. And then there, the ineligible costs that are referenced here in the motion would apply to resurfacing costs. Since that's just maintenance or what we would have to do normally, the village would have to assume those costs as well. And that's a little over $300,000. The capital improvement plan had budgeted $2 million for this project in 2027 or 2028. But we knew that we were going to be seeking out funding to help make these improvements permanent. So this is the first step in order to apply for this funding. We need to formally commit to those funds. And that's what this action is here.
Just a quick question, Matt. I apologize if you said already, but where are we talking? Thatcher?
Thatcher to Lathrop.
To Lathrop.
Yes.
Okay.
And the concept designs that were included as from Thomas Engineering are included in your packet. Those will be subject to changes. We'll have to do the open house to get feedback from residents and some more outreach. That was just a concept plan to help us see what the expected costs were. But I think that there's been positive response to from residents along the corridor to the delineators. And I think by making more hardscape and kind of actually constructing the improvements there will help even more with speeding and safety.
I'm typically used to having like ordinances in the, you know, for these sorts of things. Is there a reason why it's a resolution versus an ordinance?
I know that these are typically resolutions for
what we're really doing is providing a commitment to certain
things,
providing a commitment to a certain proportion of funding, not specific dollar amounts. It's not an actual contract. It's not an ordinance. So it's a formal way of providing the village's interest in this to the level of seriousness to apply for these grants.
Okay. I guess that was, is something like a resolution something that could be taken back at any point, or?
Well, any dollar amount in order to be spent would require additional approval.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that's not quite my question. You've answered. If I think of a way to reframe it, though.
I mean, could it be repealed or?
Yeah, I guess I see a resolution as being less of a commitment, and so that would
be a concern. No. So when it comes to motions, resolutions, and ordinances, they can each have the same level of commitment. You can approve contracts by motion. You can approve contracts by resolution. You can approve contracts by ordinance. An ordinance is the most formal of all the means of approval, and it also triggers certain statutory requirements. A resolution. Typically, contracts that don't have to be approved by ordinance are either approved by motion or by resolution. The only difference is if it's approved by resolution, sometimes clerks like contracts to be approved by resolution because then you can find it easier. The approval is right there in the record. If you approve it by motion, you have to go back into the minutes. But legally, yeah, any of those accomplish the same thing.
Right. Thanks.
So just to clarify what it is that we're doing, because it is a little bit confusing. My understanding is that We have applied, or we will be applying, or we currently are applying for an ITEP grant. And that grant requires that the village have matching funds. And so what we're doing here tonight is saying, yes, we commit to setting aside those matching funds within our budget if we get that grant.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Which many of the, most of the costs here would be eligible to, for using in our motor fuel tax fund. So I don't have a concern about right. Covering those funds if we were fortunate enough to be awarded.
And just one other thing, in the recommendation in your memo in the packet, it says we're also committing to set aside funds for any ineligible costs. And I'm assuming that those ineligible costs are costs that would not be covered by an ITEP grant.
That is exactly right. So the full amount of the project, which in this case includes resurfacing Washington Boulevard, the ITEP grant is mostly is funding the changes to the corridor, for kind of oversimplify it, but the curb extension, some of the other work that will come from it, but it will make sense to resurface the road at the same time so that it's a nice road to use,
yeah.
But that is an ineligible cost, but is eligible for our motor fuel tax funds. We would just kind of fold that in for that year's a cycle of resurfacing.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie. Any further questions for Matt or Jack or anybody? Okay, hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the vote, please.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes. Okay, motion passes. All right, we don't have an executive session, so I'm going to ask to motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All right.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
President Ducey.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.